Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels for another year of video gaming goodness. My name is Patrick Beja, and in this show we cover the news from the video games industry, and we talk about what it means. We try to look ahead, especially in this beginning of the year, and look at the games that are coming, the big events that are happening, and maybe a couple of little tidbits as well that we found interesting. I'm very glad to be joined for the first time for a non-Blizzard-only episode by Taliesin. How's it going?
Hello. Hi. Yeah, I'm very glad to be here, Patrick. This is splendid. Oh, this is great. Just you and me, one-on-one. Last time I was on this show with Evertel, my beautiful wife, we were at BlizzCon, round a table with like 100 microphones. We were, well, about 3 microphones, and we were all sharing them, 100 people, talking exciting Blizzard news. So this is, and this time I'm in my own house in a comfy chair. I kind of prefer it, I'll be honest.
Oh, yes, it is less sweaty, less plaguey from the convention.
Oh no, I'm very sweaty right now. No, don't worry. I wouldn't have let you down there. I did some sit-ups, I did some push-ups, I ran around the room, and I'm just a generally sweaty person anyway, so.
Well, I'm glad we're doing this through Discord then. That's probably a good thing. I'm going to call you Nick for this episode. Do you mind?
Yes, please do. No, that is my name, after all.
So that's how lucky.
Perfectly fair.
That's amazing.
If you're going to call me John or something, that would be weird. I'm not sure how to feel about that.
That's a bit too American as well. I mean, we try to stay away from those people. No, we don't. We love them. So for those who don't know, very quickly, you actually, with your beautiful wife, run a lovely YouTube channel about World of Warcraft specifically. And we're going to talk a little bit about Blizzard in the episode. But and I love the channel, and I'm very glad. I was very glad to discover that you actually play other games as well. So
I do. Since the channel has kind of low key taken off, I guess, we play so much WoW, which is fantastic, but about twice as much as you would comfortably. So we play all the stuff for fun.
I love how you're putting this. We can feel you're a writer. Delicate.
It's true, because you know you do all the stuff for work. And I think what a lot of people do, a lot of content creators who focus on very specifically one game, they get to a stage where they're just playing it for work. But we're not at that stage. We play it for work and then we're done, but then we play it for fun as well. So my reward for finishing a video, which takes, you know, many, many man hours, once it's done, I sit down, I play some WoW, and now I'm online, I can talk to friends on WoW, and I can raid, I can do fun stuff. But even then, it gets a bit much sometimes, and you have to just unwind with some other games. And that really informs recently the kind of games that I've been playing as well,
excellent,
which I guess we'll talk about.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about mainly about the games that none of us have been playing because they haven't come out yet. So we're going to be going through the games that are coming out in 2019, those that have been announced at least. We're going to be talking a little bit more about Epic. And I know I talk about Epic a lot, but I tried to look at the industry in this show, and I really think that the success of Fortnite is kind of almost eclipsing the things that Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Epic, is doing behind the scenes, or not so behind the scenes anymore, and what he's pushing the industry for. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about mobile as well at some point, and then a few other important bits of news. But as I said, let's start with 2019 and the most anticipated game of this coming year. It's kind of a this year especially, it's always the case, but the first, let's say, quarter or maybe 4 or 5 months have a lot of things that have been announced, and then it's kind of a giant pile of probably 2019 things. Some of them have actually been announced for 2019, but we don't have dates for them. So we're going to look at those two kind of individually and discuss which ones we're excited for and why. And let's start with January, which contains a game I'm really excited for, probably not the one that you're thinking about. On the 11th, which is tomorrow at the time we're recording, New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe is coming out on the Switch. Ace Combat 7 Skies Unknown is coming out on the 18th. Resident Evil 2, the remake or remaster, remake, I guess, is coming out on the 25th. And on the 29th, Kingdom Hearts 3 is releasing as well.
Patrick, just can I take a guess at which one you're really excited about? Because you've set a challenge there. What you've done is you said you'll never guess which one I'm excited for. Well, I'm going to nail my colours to the mast. I want to say Kingdom Hearts 3, but I don't think you're that kind of guy. I'm making some judgments on you here.
You fell online. Into my trap, Nick.
Oh, no, you are excited for Kingdom Hearts 3?
No,
I'm not saying that one. I'm using this is probably above your head because I'm so clever and intelligent. I'm using kind of Sherlock style, deduction here. I don't think it's Kingdom Hearts 3.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to say that because I'd love to make that judgment on you, but I don't think it is.
All right, so which one do you think it is?
Okay, for me, it's between Resident Evil 2, because I think you'd be interested in how they're changing the way that game is being presented.
Okay.
But I think you're going to go for Ace Combat 7 Skies Unknown. And I think I know why.
Well, you know what? You mentioned every single game on that list, except the one that I'm actually excited for.
Okay, right. Well, this is going to be one of those episodes, I can tell.
So, I mean, of course, there are probably other games that are coming out that we're not going through. There are tons and tons of games that are already, you know, that have people excited. But the one for January is the one coming out tomorrow. It's New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe, because I did have a Wii, and I was incredibly in love with Super Mario 3D World, but I didn't play the Wii version of the Wii U version of New Super Mario Brothers, and so I'm excited to play it now. And I'm a huge Mario fan, as you can probably guess. I really love everything about Mario, and so yeah, I'm just it feels like Mario Odyssey was great, and all of the 3D games. It's actually my preferred version, but sometimes it feels good to get back to the basics. And this is a great opportunity, as has been for many, many games, to rediscover it because it's coming out on the Switch. So that's the one for me.
Okay, so I would tend to agree with you. Like, when you look at that list, you automatically single out Super Mario and you go, well, obviously that's going to be brilliant. You know,
it's also a re-release that is not very inventive, and I think a lot of people are not excited for it.
Really? I mean, I'm not. I mean, that's the thing. But
are you not excited, or are you not
I'm
excited?
Not excited. Well, okay, this is the thing, right? Because on paper, it's exactly the kind of thing that I want to be playing. And a lot of the games I'm most excited for coming in 2019 are the more back to basics game. And I think that's because the game that I play the most of, WoW, is so involved. And like, if you want it to be so complex and can take over your life in such a way, that I tend to get more excited for very compact experiences. And that's why Super Mario Bros. Is like one of those things that I'd automatically go, I don't know. Maybe I'm dead inside. I didn't get excited. I didn't get excited for Odyssey, despite myself. And I tried so hard. I really wanted to, because I would describe myself as a massive Mario fan. And I'm watching sort of gameplay footage of Deluxe, and it's not stirring me. But then then I watched the trailer for Ace Combat 7, which I wanted to hate, and I'm so hyped right now. Honestly, I'm a quiver on my office chair. It got me so excited. There was no gameplay footage in it at all. It was just like the cheesiest voiceover you've ever heard, with the cheesiest music playing over the top. And I was like, I'm ready for this. I'm so ready.
That's understandable. Yeah. Are you intending to play it in VR?
Yeah, well, this is another thing. I bought my brother a PlayStation VR for Christmas, Because I found a good choice. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he could set it up really easily. He didn't have to do anything on the PC and he just plug it in and go, I got a good choice on it, man. I found a man who was selling them cheap. and we had a good old Christmas playing VR games. Now I'm so into the idea. And it was something that never crossed my mind before. And if that's out on VR, yeah, my eyes are peeled for incredibly strong VR titles over the year as well. So yeah. I'm totally up for that.
I think we mentioned this in at the end of last year, but I think these past few months in VR have kind of made me hope that whatever happens with PlayStation 5, they make it compatible with the PSVR, because it's really just a screen, right? I'm simplifying things, but it's a screen, so you could display better things on that screen by just plugging it in. And I hope that they come out with another model, but that's, you know, future discussion. And so we're basically excited for the games that other people are probably not excited for, and we're not mentioning Resident Evil 2, which a lot of people love. I thought it was the original one was ultra disappointing, because the first Resident Evil made a lot of sense, and the second one was just, oh, now we're in the police station and there's a ruby in the eye of the tiger statue, and you're like, what are you? I think they remade a mansion and decided, hey, that's exactly the same game, let's make it into a police station, and you're outside of it for 2 seconds. But anyway, so the game
I remember playing the demo for the original Resident Evil 2, which was on the disc of Resident Evil 1 when I bought it for PlayStation, because I was obviously a bit behind the times. And after having played through Resident Evil 1, then going into the demo of Resident Evil 2, it was the most exciting half an hour of my life. I mean, well, I was only like 10. But
understand. Yes, exactly. There you go. I was like an adult. I was, I don't know, 16. How old are you?
Me, I'm 35 years old, so I was probably a bit older than 10. Actually.
So I was 20. I was 25. That's why I was way too serious to play those stupid video games. And Kingdom Hearts 3, which everyone loves, and I don't. And I just, you know, I never got into it. Maybe this will be the opportunity for me to try it, but I'm not hopeful. We'll see. Anyway. your yay was half enthusiasm, half lethargy, it felt.
Well, look, I know people that are going to love Kingdom Hearts 3 it's one of those games I'm not going to have to play, because I'll know all about it.
All right. Well, we spent a long time on January, and already, you know, first month, already a ton of things that are getting people. And that's, you know, the general trend for the past 2 or 3 years, which I've been repeating ad nauseum on this show. It's like every year is incredible, and it starts... that everyone has been saying, you know, now there's no month when there's nothing. February, Crackdown 3 on the 15th, Jump Force and Far Cry New Dawn also on the 15th, and then the big gun, Anthem, coming out on the 22nd with Metroid X... Metroid. Apologies, I just gave Nintendo fans a heart attack. Metro Exodus. So, out of these, which one are you excited for?
Oh, it has to be Crackdown 3 on that list.
Really?
Crackdown 2 was one of the greatest video game experiences of my entire life. It's one of the games that I credit with getting me back into video games in a really, really big way after university. Because I put all that stuff, Patrick, I was so serious when I went to study and I went away and I left childish things behind, Patrick. And I didn't play
like
games.
Like fun and joy. Essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I was a serious artist. You don't understand. So I did play some like Warhammer 40K RTSs, but that was about it. And then Crackdown 2 came along, and oh my goodness, it changed my life, and it was wonderful. And I've been looking forward to Crackdown 3, like most people, pretty much my entire life after that. And there is this nagging doubt whenever I see a trailer for Crackdown 3 that makes me think, oh, you don't get it. You don't get it at all. This is bad. But then I think, oh, well, that kind of happened with Into the Spider-Verse last year. I was really excited about it, but then every other trailer I saw for it, I thought, I don't know about this. I'm not sure. And it turned out to be the best thing ever. So, okay, I'm putting my doubts aside, and I'm just going to allow myself to be totally hyped for Crackdown.
So hopeful Nick for the game coming out in a month. I think most people are possibly excited for it in the same way you are, probably because of their history with Crackdown 1 and not Crackdown 3, 2, I mean. So you're a little bit of an outlier there. But yeah, certainly
I couldn't help
it.
I just loved it.
Well, it's fine. To each their own. And Jump Force is this crazy anime. We're not going to go over each one. Far Cry we could talk about for a little while. But the one I want to talk about is Anthem, because, of course, if you like... essentially, if you like Destiny or any looter collector game, it's the one that could be the next big thing in that area. And I'm super excited because essentially the way I look at it, it's an Iron Man video game in space and in the future. And I want to play Iron Man. I got to play Spider-Man last year. I want to play Iron Man now. So that is something I'm really looking forward to. There's a question on whether or not BioWare is going to be able to provide an interesting single-player experience for that game. It looks very, very much Destiny-focused, although Destiny did manage to do something interesting single-player-wise in Forsaken. But we'll see. The game looks cool. It looks fun. I'm reserving my judgment, but it's the one I'm excited for.
You don't think it looks like every other game in the world?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, if you showed me screenshots of Anthem right now, I'm not sure I could tell you that was Anthem.
I completely agree. It doesn't look very original. I mean, it looks like a mashup. Art-wise, it looks super generic. But that doesn't matter as much in these kinds of games. The important part is, first of all, the moment-to-moment gameplay and the gameplay loop of, you know, what you do, why you do it, and why you keep doing the same thing over and over again. That's something I talked about at length when I was, whenever I talk about these kinds of games. People focus on either, you know, the way it looks or the story, or in these kinds of games, none of that really matters. Of course, it's great dressing, but the really important thing is the way the developer manages to make you want to replay the same content over and over again. And that's why whenever people say, oh, Overwatch should have a PvE mode, I strongly reject that premise because it becomes, I would love for it to happen, but you do it twice, and unless there's something at the end of that tunnel, call it an instance, a dungeon, a whatever, which is loot that you want, then you're not going to be playing it several times. And so that an Overwatch PvE experience is a completely different game that requires you can't like just add it as an add-on to Overwatch, or it's just a mission you do a couple of times, and they do that all the time. So that is what matters in these kinds of games. And that's a very
I agree, but then you look at something like Overwatch. I guess my thinking always is that if someone has created sort of a visual style which is incredibly original and sort of inspiring, then I guess I'm more willing to believe that they've also created a game which is more kind of thoughtful and original. So that's probably something to do with that. But I like the kind of the supposed focus on more sort of tactical multiplayer squad play in Anthem, if that turns out to be a real thing that happens. I'm not sure, but
yeah. So I mean, if actually the answer I should have given you is I would like it if it looked cooler or more original or more different, yes, I think it would have been even better. But I'm cautiously, not even cautiously optimistic about the game. It's probably the one that speaks the most to what I often like in games. So anyway. All right, that's
February.
I'm glad
you're excited about it. That's made me more excited about it. I'm sold.
Awesome.
I'm downloading it.
You still have... Oh, yeah, you're downloading it when it comes out, not now.
Yeah,
you don't have a secret. Okay.
There must be a pre-order, I'm assuming. I'll get it.
Okay, cool. Excellent. I've made money for BioWare, so I'm happy. March, we have Devil May Cry 5 on the 8th. On the 15th, we have Tom Clancy's The Division 2, which is another one of those games. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice on the 22nd, and Yoshi's Crafted World, which was just given a date on the 29th. Tell me, what do you like there?
I tell you what I'm not excited for, again, unfortunately, is The Division. I don't think I'd be alone with that. I think we're going to mention a little bit later how they are selling that game and what platforms they're making it available and things. And I think there's a real sense of just needing to draw a line under the first Division. I just don't trust them to. I just don't trust them to make it better and solve the problems that they're in the first place. Like they never showed me, because I wanted to love The Division so much, because on paper,
maybe that's
I could
why,
totally
yeah.
get into that game. I could love it so much. And I just felt like they never at any point cared about it.
That's a bit unfair.
And they left it's, it probably is, but I'm a harsh kind of guy.
You feel the way you feel, but yeah.
I'm unforgiving. you know? And I
ruthless is the word that comes to my mind when I think of you, indeed.
Yes. Everyone says so, yeah. So I just don't trust it to be good. And for me, Washington isn't an interesting setting as New York. It doesn't kind of speak to me on the sort of a visceral level and make me excited just for where it is and how it's realized. So my eye is on the division out of all those games, but I wouldn't say I'm excited about it.
Okay. The division didn't grab me. There's something about the contemporary setting that makes it not work as well. Everyone always mentions, you know, you're shooting a dude in the face 15 million times. If it's an alien or a robot, then yeah, you can believe it. But when it's a person, it feels dumb. So that's, of course, there were other issues with that game. But we'll see how it works out. The fact that it's coming out like 3 weeks after Anthem might be an issue, but anyway, so we'll see. And they're not pushing it as much as I would have thought they would. So I'm wondering if they don't have their reservations as well. But I mean, it's March.
It's a couple of months.
Yeah.
If you like seeing sort of numbers popping out of people's heads,
exactly.
Like at a really rapid rate.
Devil May Cry 5. I'm excited about it because I never got into Devil May Cry, and I'm going to try that one and see if I can get the joy of that type of game for that one. And Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, of course, From Software, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, all of the Souls series. And this one looks a little bit more accessible, a little bit less punishing. So I'm excited to try it as well. I wasn't a fan of Bloodborne. I did put a lot of time into it, but it didn't, you know, it didn't click with me. So both of those, I think, are intriguing again, and I'm interested in. April, we have Mortal Kombat 11 on the 23rd, Days Gone on the 26th, and Dauntless and Super Meat Boy Forever in April, supposedly, but they don't have a date. Dauntless, for those who don't remember, is a more indie take on the Monster Hunter formula, and you take down monsters as, it's a more arcadey version of Monster Hunter, maybe, so you have to work together to take down giant monsters, and it's a very comic booky type aesthetic. So which one do you like there?
Patrick, sign me up for the exclusive limited edition pre-order t-shirt model thing for whatever Super Meat Boy is selling. I'll take it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I'll get a tattoo of it. I'll put it on my chest. I'll
for a difficult platformer person. That's,
well, I mean, I don't think it. Okay, like, this is the thing, right? This is why I'm a genius at Super Meat Boy, because I'm with you. I'm not really into that as well. I enjoyed you talking about Celeste last episode, I totally agree with everything you said about Celeste, and that kind of is the same case for me for Super Meat Boy. I bought it on a whim on Steam one day, and I just put it on my PC and I started playing it, and I was blown away by just how fast it was and how slick it was, and how difficult. And I got to this level which I just couldn't beat at all. It was like a boss level and everything was happening so fast, and I played it for about probably about 10 hours, this one level, over and over again, thousands and thousands of tries. And I was like, I think this is actually physically impossible. And I hate to do this for a platform game, but I'm actually going to go online. I'm going to have a look at a guide and see what's happening. And I went onto YouTube and I saw this level. I found this level. And I was like, well, this is wrong. This is like literally half as slow as my version of the game. And every single video I watched, it was half the speed. And it's because my monitor was at 144 hertz. And there's a little bug in that game where if your display speed is faster than 60 frames, it speeds the game up to match.
Oh my God.
So I was literally playing Super Meat Boy at double the speed. And so I slowed the speed down.
For those who don't know, Super Meat Boy is a fast game. Like, it is.
Anyway. Yeah. And I played through those first, like, I don't know, 30, 40 levels. And I was like, wow, this is so fast. My mind is blown. This is like what I always wanted Sonic to be like. This is incredible. And then I got to this level which I literally physically couldn't do. And I've done it thousands of times. And then I fixed the bug, so it's playing at its normal speed. And I beat the level easily. And it turns out now I'm the best Super Meat Boy player of all time, because I learned to play the game playing at double the speed. But now I can't play it on normal speed. It's too boring.
Well, this is a wonderful story, and I'm excited to see what happens with the next title.
This is the thing. I'm looking forward to approaching a Super Meat Boy game properly, as it was meant to be played.
And Forever, if I'm not mistaken, has infinite levels, essentially. So that's pretty cool. All right. Well, that's good. I'm a little bit excited about Mortal Kombat, but really it's Days Gone, which I know a lot of people are going to say, more zombies, more apocalypse, but, you know, narrative, open-ish world game with the zombies. I'm keeping my hopes alive, even though I know it's possibly not going to be a great game, but it's exactly my jam. It's essentially what I need to make me as I'm waiting for The Last of Us Part 2, but we'll see how it is. And Dauntless could be really cool as well, so we'll see. May, we have Rage 2 and the movie Pokemon Detective Pikachu, which I plugged in here on the 10th. Rage 2 is coming out on the 14th. I'm going to put a few of them together here. June 21st, Crash Team Racing. July, the Atari VCS is coming out. Weird console. August 27, Shenmue 3. And November 8, the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. So, that's a bunch for the second half of the year.
That's what I was going to say, Patrick. Yeah.
I mean, Rage 2 could be fun.
Is anyone going to play Rage 2 when the new Doom is out? That's the thing. It feels like if I want my schlocky, ridiculous, big explosions, running around, cool, third-person shootery thing, I'm gonna play the new Doom, aren't I?
Where is the new Doom? It's not in my list.
Doom Eternal will be this year at some point, won't it?
Yeah, you're right. I don't know why it's not in my list, but it should be, and it should be one of my most...
Your list is a terrible list, Patrick. I've got a whole ton of things I need to add to this list.
Clearly. Awful. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
We need to have some words.
Go ahead. Tell me.
You call yourself a video game expert. I'm not buying it. But the things that are on your list, please never talk about either of those movies ever again. And I don't want to hear you talking about them later in the year either. Thank you.
Are you a Pokemon fan? The game, I mean.
On a very, very small scale. At a kind of a very casual level.
Okay, well, in order to not insult you, I will not talk at length about the Detective Pikachu movie. I saw the trailer, I thought it was cute, and I'm going to go see it. That's all I'll say. Oh, excellent. Well, so you're happy for everything.
I hope you go and see it. I just don't. You don't talk about it afterwards to me.
Excellent. All right.
That's absolutely fine.
I'll make a note of that. Shenmue 3. I am so not. You know, that's my comment on Shenmue 3. It's the typical example of people remembering something and thinking it was so great, and it was kind of at the time. So not today. And they remade the same game. We don't know. I'm being disingenuous. It's not. We don't know how different the game is going to be, but it really looks, at least graphically, like the same game.
And, plus, you'll be spending all your time on the Atari VCS, surely. So you won't have time for any more nostalgia.
Obviously. So many problems with the VCS. I'm not even going to get into it. We'll talk about it in July, in the dead of summer, when it's coming out.
Look forward to that one. I won't be able to listen. I think I'm away.
Well, you know, the podcasts go away when you don't listen to them the first few days. So, sadly, no way for you to listen to that. So there's a bunch of games. Like tons of them that are coming out that don't have a release date. Do you want to look at that list and tell us which ones you're looking forward to? You can mention a few.
There's the interesting mobile titles on there, which I see from a very voyeuristic perspective, because I can't possibly play any video games on my Samsung
mobile?
S5.
Which, what are you looking at?
Mario Kart Tour is going to be a mobile game, is that right?
Oh, that is true. Yes, absolutely.
Now that I see, like, I'm excited about any Nintendo mobile games. I loved Mario Jump. I thought it was really great. I can't.
So Yeah, for mobile games, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So I'll and it's Mario Run, by the way, not Jump. But yes.
Did I say? No, it was like the opposite of Mario Jump. It was Mario well, no
you,
jump.
The
Mario
only thing no you jump. Actually do is jump. So yeah. That's why.
I loved it anyway. It was a long time ago, Patrick. I can't remember that far back. I can't remember what I had for breakfast 2 days ago. I can't remember all the way back to 2016.
That is fair enough.
But I'm excited for Mario Kart Tour. I like the look of Wolfenstein Youngblood. I think it's got like an interesting sort of Nazis in the 80s aesthetic, which is exciting for me because it looks exactly like Warhammer 40,000 in the way it's all put together. I love Warhammer 40,000, and it's when I look at Wolfenstein, the new Wolfenstein games, I have to kind of admit to myself, yeah, there is a pretty strong Nazi aesthetic going on in 40K, which maybe I didn't appreciate when I was a bit younger. But that is just an aesthetic thing, which I find interesting about.
Well, you can play it co-op, so you can play it with your wife.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Play the two twin sisters, daughters of
go busting some Nazis together.
Yeah,
exactly. And with their beautiful deep southern drawls in 80s Paris, it's gonna be fun. It's great, amazing. But I was talking earlier about sort of how I like very compact experiences, and those are the ones I'm looking forward to. And nearly every single game that I enjoyed in 2018 was a game I wasn't looking forward to at the beginning of the year. And it kind of came out of nowhere, and sort of took me by surprise. Stuff like Dead Cells and Celeste. And I know Subnautica had been sort of in early access for about 20 years before it actually hit, but I only noticed it when it actually hit. And I found that very exciting. So it's difficult because I'm trying to kind of second guess things a bit if I'm actually getting myself to look forward to games this year. And they're all little experiences. I'm really looking forward to a game called Sable.
Oh, right, yes.
Which looks absolutely fantastic. Again, because it's got this incredible, beautiful aesthetic and it catches my eye, Patrick, and it makes me think, ooh, I wonder what traveling through that land is going to look like on my screen. I wonder how it's going to feel. And I wonder how it's going to feel different from other video games I play. And
yeah, Sable is the one that looks like a French-Belgian comic book, right?
Mm. And it's absolutely stunning. And it's got this incredible soundtrack by Japanese Breakfast. And it's like apparently semi-open world, which it looks to have the same kind of things that I like about it that I liked about Breath of the Wild, I guess, and that kind of relaxing kind of sort of semi-meditative exploration in a way, you know, where there is sort of tension and there is adventure and there is excitement, but just something about existing in the world is incredibly sort of relaxing in a way and sort of spiritual almost, you know.
Okay, very cool. I
can tell you
think about yeah, no, I mean, Sable does look, I didn't even have it in this list, and it's a giant list that is kind of missing a few really important games, or not important, but at least that should, I just added it to the list, so there you go. So I'm going to mention a few very quickly. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, because I'm a sucker for Castlevania. Cyberpunk 2077, in case it comes out in 2019, which is not certain, but we'll see. Gears 5, I think, has an interesting approach, possibly, to that franchise. Not as radical as God of War did for that franchise, but I think there's a little bit of more mature way of delivering story, which I would be interested in. In the Valley of Gods, I wasn't a huge fan of Santocampo's Firewatch. I liked it, but I was disappointed at the end. And in the Valley of Gods, I'm still interested because I thought it was an interesting narrative experience. I'm a huge Marvel fan, so Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, The Black Order, exclusive on Switch. I'm curious to check out for sure. Mario Kart Tour, you mentioned. We'll talk about it again. Samurai Showdown, because I'm a fan of SNK and fighting games. Wolfenstein Youngblood, you mentioned as well. Star Wars Jedi the Fallen Order, coming out in Q4, is probably the one that I'm the most curious about because it's a huge thing. We don't know anything about it beyond the fact that it's Respawn Entertainment who is creating it. It's Respawn, of course, Titanfall developer, and previously many of the people at Infinity Ward behind the very successful era of Call of Duty, the renewal of Call of Duty. So some of the best games in the series, undoubtedly the best games in the series. Very curious to see what they're going to be doing. Essentially, if it's Titanfall with lightsabers and, you know, the single-player campaign of Titanfall 2 with lightsabers and Jedi aesthetic, I'm in.
Oh, no, I can't take it. I can't take another kind of, like, buddy relationship with my droid being followed around like Titanfall. I can't say that was enough for me. I can't. Conversations where we become incredibly close to our droid and then they get blown up or something and we're all upset about it. I can't know.
It might happen, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah, lots of really cool stuff in there. And oh, I checked, by the way, Doom Eternal doesn't have a release date. That's why it's not on the list.
Right.
It's very possible that it's going to come out in 2019, but it's likely even. And there are tons of other games. I mean, Ori, Psychonauts 2, Wasteland 3, a new Is coming out. It's like, out of these, not even taking into account the ones in the beginning of the year, there are like three titles that I could imagine be in my game of the year list, possibly. So it's a lot of things.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, I look at that list and there's loads I would say I'm excited for, but there's very, very few that I can guarantee 100% that I will definitely play.
Really?
Which is really weird. Yeah, and yet I look at a game like Ape Out, and I think to myself, I'm definitely 100% going to play that game.
Which one?
I look at a game, Ape Out.
Oh, Ape Out. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm going to play the hell out. I already know I'm going to play the hell out of that game. And I'm 100% I'm going to buy that game, I'm going to play it. And Sea of Solitude, I'm going to play Sea of Solitude, 100% going to play that game. And then I look at, and I guess maybe I'm just a bit, like a lot of people at the moment, maybe a bit disillusioned with AAA sort of hype machines, and everything does look so similar to me. I love Firewatch, I'll probably check out that new one. I wasn't like you. Firewatch was my first ever walking simulator, and I got off on that. I thought it was fantastic. The writing in that was so good.
So let me ask you, what was which were your games for last year? You mentioned Celeste and Dead Cells. Anything else?
The ones that took me by surprise, which it might surprise you to learn, also included Spider-Man and God of War.
Well, there you go. See, that's what I was going to say.
I looked at the list and I saw Spider-Man and God of War were on the list for 2018. I was like, oh, no, there's never been a good Spider-Man since Spider-Man 2. It's clearly going to be horrible. And God of War just isn't up my street at all. Because, you know, I played the other games. I thought I'm kind of done with God of War. Which is exactly how I feel about Gears 5. So maybe that'll surprise me. But at the moment, I'm looking at that, and I'm in the same way that I would never have thought Spider-Man was going to be one of the greatest games ever created in the world. But I can't guarantee that I'll play anything on that list, which is
fair
weird.
Enough. No, that's completely fair. And I, to be honest, I don't think Gears 5 is going to be that. But but we'll see. We'll see what happens. So yeah, that's a list of the big games that have been announced for 2019. We will be exploring that in more detail as the year unrolls. For now, let's talk a little bit more about Tim Sweeney and Epic and Fortnite and the Epic Game Store. We didn't mention it last episode. Maybe we should have, but technically Fortnite was released in 2017, even the Battle Royale mode. So we didn't. But according to, who was it? Sensor Tower, I'm guessing, one of the analyst firms, Epic has made $3 billion in profits in 2019, essentially on Fortnite, $3 billion US. To put that a little bit in context, I have a few numbers from our good friend Oscar Lemaire, French analyst. Essentially, it is the three times what companies like Activision or Electronic Arts make in a year in profits. It's twice what Nintendo earned last year as the Switch was taking off. It's nine times what Square made last year, 11 times what Ubisoft made. Both Square and Ubisoft were record earnings. And he got another interesting one here. Capcom, who has published some of the game industry's biggest titles in the history of the world, Street Fighter or Resident Evil, they made the biggest profit of their history last year. Capcom, Epic made 20 times that. It's like, I don't have words. We have a lot of numbers. Thank you, Oscar, for this. But I don't have words to describe the phenomenon that Fortnite is. And it's not the only thing that I want to talk about. They have announced that The Division 2 is going to be exclusive on the Epic Game Store. And the Epic Game Store is going to be arriving on Android in 2019. And that, by the way, is in a Game Informer's interview for December, which I didn't see and nobody noticed, apparently. I didn't hear about it, at least. This is huge as well, because the Epic Game Store redefines what the store/developer split is. As you well know, the Epic Game Store gives 12% of the proceeds to the developer, as opposed to, in general, 30%. I'm sorry, not 12%. Obviously, they keep 12% and give 88% to the developer. And in general, the split is 70-30. We knew the game store was doing that on PC and giving Steam a run for its money. And doing it on Android as well, I think this is, I was joking about this on Twitter earlier, I think this is the biggest thing to happen to gaming in 10 years. They are redefining the relationship between stores and the developers. They're making all of this, because it's easy to underestimate or undersell how much this is, you know? When you go from 70% to 88%, 18% increase of the whole money you get, like, imagine from one day to the next, your salary was increased to 18%. And it's even more if you're using the Unreal Engine, which might get into competitive issues in the future, but I think it is huge, and it's going to push everyone in that industry to take a hard look at how they are doing that split. I think in the future, single-handedly, Tim Sweeney, who's, by the way, more wealthy now than Gabe Newell, I think it's a big symbol, is pushing to redefine that relationship, which is not very visible, but I think it influences the game industry tremendously. And it's a big, not consumer-focused change, but industry change like we never thought would happen. And Fortnite being that successful is enabling Sweeney, who is very almost militant about these things, and we've seen it before, to single-handedly move the lines in that field. I think it's
And I think that's the big takeaway from all of that is how the industry is going to be changed from it, and particularly in relation to what Tim Sweeney does. And I'm kind of excited by that. I think Tim Sweeney has got some really good ideas. And there's something I find quite exciting about the idea that he has like this massive say in what the industry is going to look like in a few years' time. Now, there are huge dangers with that as well, of course. But you're right, absolutely right. They are completely changing the face of how games are going to be delivered, and therefore how that's going to trickle down, how they're made and created, and why they're made as well. And that's my big worry. It's because when you make $3 billion in profits one year, it's a massive disaster then if you only make $2 billion in profits the next year. Even if that's better than everyone else combined again, like it was this year, that's a huge disaster for shareholders. And we've been seeing that in video games a lot recently. Next year, if they only make $2 billion, that's going to be a huge disaster for them. Which sounds ridiculous, but I mean, that's late stage capitalism. Get over it.
I don't think that's quite fair. I think everyone in this case understands that it might not happen again, or maybe it's going to happen for a year or two, but it's not like, you know, they're going to be doing this all the time. And I'm wondering, is Epic
gaming podcast understands
Epic
that? Yeah,
publicly owned. I'm not 100%.
I'll
research. It's a very important piece of information. You're right, but keep going.
But looking at it more optimistically, it's almost more interesting for me to see how everyone else in the industry reacts to it rather than what Tim Sweeney's doing and how Epic are changing things. Because like they're at the forefront. They've got all the power right now. Mm. But I mean, EA aren't sitting there on their golden thrones thinking, well, they got lucky this year. We'll just leave them to it. No, they've got their covetous glances over there and they're wondering how they can sort of get a piece of that and sort of make all of that money and do that. And it's be really interesting to see how people react to that. What do you think is going to be the main way that the industry is completely changed by this, Patrick?
I think it's just going to enable people to make games for cheaper. It's going to impact massively the indie developers, it's going to make it easier for them to make a return on their games. For big companies, it's going to mean more money. If you want to take the super starry-eyed version of it, it means they're going to need less microtransactions in the games to make up the money. But honestly, let's not be childish about it. It's probably not going to change in that way. Especially, and this is still the idea that the Epic Game Store is going to take off is fairly realistic because of all of these and the free games they've been giving out, but it is not 100% certain. Even if they don't, though, in order for developers to not go to the Epic Game Store, the others, I think, are, that's the reason I'm saying the others are going to have to reevaluate the way they do things, the way they do the split. And Sweeney was explaining that through Fortnite, they have managed to have a good look at how much it costs to run a service like this. And essentially what he's saying is you need about 10% of the income to run the things. And so 30% is ridiculous. He says between, let's say, 7 and 10%. So that's why he's fighting against the 30%, because it was necessary before, but now the economy of scale means it isn't anymore. And the fixed costs become negligible in when you get to those scales. So yeah, for me, I think the reason this is important is because you're going to be able to access your customers, the gamers, without thinking, holy crap, you know, 30% of everything I make is going to go to someone else. 30% is a huge amount. If you can reduce that to 12%, it makes everything. That's, as I was saying before, 18% of your money is going to go back to your tiny company and your tiny, indie developers. So I think this is, I mean, it's not going to change the world in the sense that we're going to see different games, but I think it's a more fair and more healthy way of approaching games distribution in a almost exclusively digitized world. So,
I mean, there's that, but there's also, is it going to make it harder for games to actually be discovered and found in the first place? Because one of the strengths of Steam...
Well, that's already an issue.
One of the strengths of Steam is that it's a monopoly. Mm. So you have your game on Steam and you are on the best platform to be discovered. Like, I know there's a billion games out there every minute. There's probably been like 1,000 games released on Steam since we started this podcast. But having like that is the only way to get your game out there. It's the best way. So 30% doesn't seem so bad when it's the only game in town. And yes, the Epic Game Store has got a better deal for you. And yes, it's probably going to do very well. But the fact that a monopoly doesn't exist anymore could also be a barrier to a game just taking off in a really huge way. Because suddenly, even if the Epic Game Store takes 50% of the player base from Steam or shares 50% of the player base with Steam, that's still splitting that over two different platforms then.
Yeah, but that's competition. No, I understand,
oh, yeah,
but that's called competition, you know? And the monopoly of Steam, I think, yes, has the advantage that everything is in the same place, and people have been saying, oh, I don't want to have multiple stores and that I use and have different accounts. I understand that. But there's a flip side to it, which means Steam can do whatever they want. Same with, of course, Apple is not going to let Epic do what they
totally
want on the Apple Store. But
I'm not disagreeing with the pros of it at all. I'm playing devil's advocate a bit, and I'm just trying to think of what
negative aspect could be.
If I was a game developer, what would I be thinking?
Mm.
And I'd be thinking, well, now I've got to work out a way to get my game onto Steam and
I've got to
make sure it's discovered on both of those platforms. Or if I just go with Epic, there's a chance that I'm missing out on this huge sort of player base on Steam that might just never bother checking out the Epic store. Or it just makes things a little bit more complicated for me. And that competition is great for consumers, and it's probably great in the long run for developers as well. Certainly Epic's prices are. But from a point of view of having this huge platform where I can put my game and know that that's the one best place to have it, this just gives developers a bit more to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the kind of developers that will benefit from that split are the kinds of developers that weren't very visible on Steam anyway. If they did become visible, it was probably through other means of marketing, getting journalists, content creators to look at their game, and, word of mouth, all of those. So I as I was saying, I think that push will impact Steam as well. They can't, over the long run, they can't stay at 30% or whatever they announced, 3 weeks ago, which is if you make $15 bazillion, then you can go to 20%. that is not going to fly. And the Division being published on the Epic Game Store exclusively, not exclusively, but not on Steam, is the first sign of that. It's a big company doing this. Maybe it's because they're thinking we don't have, as big hopes for the Division. Only the people who want it are going to go get it. So let's make as much money out of it as we can. But I think that's a trial balloon, and we're going to see that happen more and more. And so it's going to make the Epic Game Store be more visible than it is now, and almost as visible as Steam. So I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. But
I don't think visibility is going to be a problem for the Epic Games Store. Mm. And I think the Division thing is a really good point. I think if PlayStation have taught us anything in this console generation, it's that exclusives are incredibly important and will be the difference between you winning or losing, like, the war in gaming. And I think that'll probably be an important factor in the long run as well.
Yeah, yeah, it is definitely an interesting shift. And by the way, I looked into it. Tencent owns 40% of the company. And Tim Sweeney is a super interesting dude. But he says essentially they don't have a lot of power in the company, that he would probably say that anyway. but Tencent, 30%, that is a lot of Chinese mobile focused company owning a part of it. But they've been owning those 40% since 2012. And that was a moment when Epic, again, headed by Sweeney, considered that things weren't working out. And that's when they let go of Gears because it was too expensive to produce. There's lots of stories around this. But yeah, we'll see how it happens. I think this is a big industry shift. And we'll see. I think, another thing, if you want to look at the negative aspect of it, I think smaller stores like Good Old Games, maybe even itch.io, might have a harder time making a living if they also have to, because let's be honest, those don't have a lot of advantages. It's been made clear to everyone that things like DRM don't matter as much as they should. So people don't go to the Good Old Game Store to get DRM-free stuff. And if they still take 30%, they don't have. They only have disadvantages compared to the Epic Game Store. So I don't know. Oh, and by the way, you don't have to implement DRM on the Epic Game Store. You do it if you want to. It's up to the developer. So he knows his stuff. And so we kind of brushed off, we kind of brushed past the fact that it's on Android, which is the reason why I brought this up.
I'm sorry.
But it is huge. Like, we all know that mobile gaming is gigantically important in today's gaming landscape. And the fact that they're coming to Android and deciding, well, we only take 12% when Google is taking 30. There are other stores on the Android platform. I'm sure all of them take 30 as well, or more or less. And pushed by the huge success of Fortnite on mobile, it's bigger on mobile than on PC or consoles. Everyone's possibly, if they tie it, everyone's going to have that game store. And they're in business at that point. And so mobile gaming Tencent we were talking about is probably going to be moving to the Epic Game Store as well. So again, consumers, I don't think we care whether we get this game on this or that store, but it's still big for the industry.
Yeah, and it blows my mind, that whole mobile thing. I mean, Fortnite moved onto mobile so seamlessly. It was nothing. It wasn't even a blip. It was just there, and it happened. And suddenly, it was how everyone was playing the game.
Yeah,
and it was so incredible to see that, and it blew my mind. And it makes me worry that I don't understand anything that's happening.
Well, who does, honestly? But that's again, you know, that's Sweeney. He was like, mobile is where it's at. We're going to be doing it, and we're going to be making all of this cross-platform for everyone. And
the work he's doing for cross-platform is so important. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the reasons I really like him at the moment.
Yeah, I think there's one aspect. Maybe I'm misguided, but Tim Sweeney has been someone advocating for, I really don't like the idea of opposing consumers and big companies and evil corporations, you know, but there's some truth to it, I think, of course. But if you take that view, Sweeney has been advocating for consumers, and also it happens that what he was advocating for was good for Epic, but for a long time, for a really long time. It didn't come out of nowhere. So I kind of have a more trust in what he does and why he does it than maybe I would if someone else, let's say at EA or Activision, would say the same thing. So
yeah. He's got a lot of leeway with me at the moment, yeah, a lot of slack.
I think that's fair. All right, let's talk about mobile games a little bit more, because I realized I was looking at the games coming out this year. In 2019, we have Mario Kart Tour, The Elder Scrolls Blade, Diablo Immortal, possibly. We have a new Alien game, which is essentially, it looks like Alien Isolation for phones. We also have Ben Brode's new company. He was, of course, the lead guy at Hearthstone at Blizzard. Just revealed, so his company, Second Dinner, revealed that they have a deal, well, with Tencent. Who else? They got a minority stake for $30 million in his company. Can you imagine that? $30 million on Ben Brode and his team's name. And also, they managed to snag a deal with Marvel. And I'm guessing, I put it in the mobile category because I'm guessing it's going to be a mobile card game, but who knows? Maybe it won't be. It's essentially a big part of the Hearthstone team that joined Ben Brode and Hamilton too, by the way, when they created Second Dinner. Another name you might know is Yong Woo. He was very visible in that team. So yeah, Marvel game. Probably card game, I'm guessing, probably on mobile. Lots of games that... So I still don't like mobile games. But I think it's really interesting that now we're seeing a lot of quote-unquote, I want to say real developers. That's not true. That's not fair. Traditional games developers looking at mobile and saying, how can we put the games we love, not the games that we play on mobile because that's the one that exists, but the games we love and adapt them to the mobile interface. And sure, let's disregard the fact that Mario Run came out in 2016 and that was Nintendo and it wasn't a huge success and I didn't love it. Let's put that aside for a second. And we can consider that maybe 2019 is going to be the year when we finally have the answer of, can mobile games be attractive to traditional PC and console players, gamers? And I think that we might start to get that answer in 2019.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm a PC elitist. I own consoles as well. I think one of the reasons that I've never been into mobile games, and that there are very specific exceptions to that, but generally, it's something I try and avoid. And I don't know if that's me being elitist. I don't know if it's just because I've never come across like incredibly beautiful games that have really captured me on mobile. I don't know if it's because I've always had a terrible phone. That could genuinely be a factor in my thinking. Like, I hate being on my phone. It's not a very good phone. So I don't.
So what you're saying is, when you're told, "Don't you guys have phones?" It doesn't work for you.
I was like, "No, no, mate, I don't." I mean, I do, but it starts stuttering if I try and play Tetris or write a text, to be honest. So it's a difficult one, and I think the problem I've always had is kind of a turn of phrase that you used there, actually, where you said, how do we adapt these games to work on mobile? And I think that's the problem I've always had, is I've always felt like I'm playing a game that would have existed better elsewhere, but has been adapted to work on mobile. And it's that word adaption that I don't like. And that's, I've been having the same feelings with VR. Because when I got the VR for my brother, I was like, oh, right, okay. Well, what would I want to experience in VR? I'd love to experience Skyrim in VR. How amazing would that be? And the new Resident Evil as well. Oh, I bet that's really scary. But those were two games that were adapted very heavily for the VR medium. And it felt that way. They didn't feel like they really belonged in VR, and they made me feel a bit ill. And it was when I came across games that were created with VR in mind from the very start that I started getting really excited about it as a medium, because it made sense for me more. And it was, you know, very kind of static games, actually, where you're standing still, a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have expected to like about VR. And I feel like no one's kind of captured me in the same way for mobile yet. Yeah, there's not been a game where I've played it and I've gone, this could only exist on mobile, and I'm glad that it's on my phone right now.
It's very, yeah, that's absolutely fair. And I'm playing a little bit of the devil's advocate here when I'm saying this, but at the same time, I think there are mobile games that are fun as mobile games, and I always talk about Supercell in that area because I think they're genuinely gameplay-focused developer on mobile, which is a rare thing. Many of them are more marketing focused, and the games are usually a mess from a gameplay perspective. The big issue we have here is that we're not seeing traditional games being, you know, developed even as originally envisioned mobile games satisfactorily. And the example I often use when we talk about this is Bungie. When they came out with Halo. And when they did that, what they really did was create a first-person shooter, which until then was only really viable on PC, and everyone thought it would never work on consoles, and it was like, oh, controller, what are you talking about? You can't play an FPS on a controller. And there had been attempts before that, but Bungie found the formula, and since then, yes, of course, PC gamers are going to tell you it's never as good as on the PC. Sure, yes, but it's possible, and it works very well, and there are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of people, myself included, who I want to say tolerate because I'm a snob, but who enjoy first-person shooters on console. And it works. It just works now. So I'm thinking that 2019 might finally be the year that developers are looking at mobile and thinking, let's figure this out. And at some point, and it's not as simple as finding the control scheme and the values of moving the joystick to that much and turning the screen on that level. It's not as precise as this, but figure out how to do games that are fun on mobile as well. Games that are fun for the audience of traditional games, which I define as PC and console games. And it might take time. Maybe this first salvo is not going to be it. And maybe they're just not going to be able to do it. And we're forever stuck with mobile games being the crap mobile games that we've seen until now. It's possible. But I'm wondering if we're not going to see a real attempt, at least and at last, this year.
I agree. I want to pick up a mobile, and I'm sure these games exist because I'm not very involved in the mobile market. I want to play a mobile game that doesn't feel like a Diablo game. I want to play a mobile game that I pick up and delights me and surprises me by using the functions of my phone in a way that no other medium could, you know? And
maybe,
maybe it suddenly my camera turns on and I have to use it for something, but, and yeah. Like maybe it calls like a really expensive number and I have to stop it, otherwise I get a huge bill. Like I want it to delight me in a way that PC
so
games
gimmicky.
Delight me by surprising me, or Switch games delight me by surprising me, or VR games delight me by when I breathe out like the cigarette smoke that I've just breathed in, like I see wafting in the air and things like that. I want mobile games to kind of use the medium in exciting ways. And because I would never dismiss any medium if there's good games on it. Like, the more good games that exist, the better for me. I'm never going to say a good game existing is a bad thing. And if Diablo Immortal turns out to be brilliant, which by all accounts it is, people who have played it really like it. And that's great. It's an extra excellent Diablo game on the market. That's fantastic news.
I will agree with you on one point, which is if the game is the same kind of experience adapted to the mobile, then your phone might ring and that might happen. I'm guessing you muted yourself. So if it's the same one, then I'd rather play it on my PC or console, probably, most probably. And in that sense, yes, I don't want the exact same game on mobile. That will benefit people who only play on mobile. And there are some of them, for sure. But they're not who usually this show or our community who we're talking to. So I understand that part of it. But I still
and
think
I,
that...
I might have said the same thing about the Switch, though. And that's the thing. And I always have to kind of spot these things. I would have said, well, what's the point of the Switch? What's the point in having all these ports onto the Switch? But there really is
and
a point
I think,
of the Switch.
I think it's the same with PCs versus consoles. You might think, well, what's the point having it on a console if I can play it on a PC? It's just, you know, I go to the den or I go to the office and I want to play sitting down on my PC. But there are some games that you prefer, very similar, sometimes the same games, on your console, and you prefer playing them on the console. There are some for me. So I guess there's a big question mark in there, and maybe it's all going to amount to nothing. But dismissing the dismissing the mobile platform just because it's unwieldy and we've never had any games that are worth it for 10 years and no developers has managed to create a game that is compelling and original, and the fact that it's always been riddled, you know, there are a lot of reasons to dismiss mobile. I agree, but it doesn't mean
I've played
happen.
Lots of
but
original we'll and interesting games on mobile, but none of them have been full gameplay experiences. They've all been, you know, the ones I've loved most, like games like Bud and what have you, they've been very, very short, kind of almost demo type experiences.
Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, it wasn't my phone, by the way, it was my doorbell, but I've just ignored them. They can go away.
But what if it's important? What if it's...
No, I know exactly. It's a package, and it's not a very interesting package, so don't worry. It's
okay, all right. So, yeah, anyway, I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think what's interesting is that we're seeing those games from big developers now, and we'll have an answer these next 2 years if it works or not.
Are you excited about the Ben Bro project?
Yes, I love Ben Brode as like a human being. I think he is a wonderful person, or at least the persona he projects online. He's so optimistic and lively, and I, as I mentioned many times, I sank I think 2 years of my life in Hearthstone. Could not stop playing it for the year before it came out, as you know, I was working for Blizzard, and the year after it came out, I was playing it all the time. I love Marvel. Like the anyway. So yes,
love Marvel. You love Bro. That's 30 million well spent. From
exactly, I think Tencent has made.
I had no idea that sum of money was involved, but I thought, in fairness, Ben Bro could probably sell me a banana for 30 million if I had it. Hey, you want to buy this? I'd be like, yes, Ben. How much do you want for it? 30 million. Exactly. Excellent. Count me in.
I will say, however, it's probably going to be a card game. I would be more excited if they were trying their hand at something else. I'm not sure they can get me back into the card game. But
I've got a feeling you're not really the target audience, Patrick.
Yeah, it's like mobile. Well, I mean, Marvel is very popular everywhere. I think it's not just going to be a Chinese targeted game. I don't know. We'll see. But yes, I'm excited. Should I talk about that Activision ruining Blizzard thread that I posted,
no, Patrick,
or not?
That was a really long... Yes, of course, please.
But I don't know, because I feel we've gone on for a while, and... Okay, I'll just mention it very quickly.
This is something that you put on Twitter, and you you create... you're going to be very modest about this, Patrick, so I'm going to sell this for you.
Thank you.
Viewers, sit down, relax. Patrick, viewers... Oh, there we go. You're not viewing much. Listeners. Patrick wrote an incredibly insightful and interesting, thoughtful, grown-up, and long Twitter thread on Twitter the other day, as is traditional, about his thoughts around the current controversy surrounding Activision Blizzard, and as a whole, I guess, sort of big gaming publishers in general this year. And I found it an incredibly interesting discussion and an incredibly interesting point of view. And yes, I would like you to share it right now with all of us. Please.
Well, I'll correct you on one thing. It's not as a whole. It was specifically about the situation Blizzard and Activision are in and the way it's being interpreted. And I'll whittle it to its main, because I'm looking at what we're hearing and what is sparking the controversies, and the idea that Activision is ruining Blizzard by forcing them to do evil corporate stuff that they didn't want to do when they were pure gamer-focused Blizzard, you know? And the one key thing, I guess, you can go check out the thread if you want, but the one key thing I'll take out of it and mention here is that they are focusing on developers, on hiring more developers, and on letting people, developer teams, develop the games with the time and resources they need. They're cutting costs in other areas, but the key thing is people are, I think, did you coin the Schrodinger's Blizzard idea?
I like to think I coined it, yeah.
Okay, so let's go with that. People see negative aspects in everything Blizzard does, even when they're contradictory. So they're unhappy if Blizzard does X, and they're unhappy if Blizzard does the opposite of X. So it's like you're unhappy no matter what happens, whether Blizzard exists or not, in the Schrodinger analogy. So here, what they're doing is, the one thing that struck me the most is Diablo. We've heard from the Kotaku reports that they reset that game 2 years ago, and they have been working on it since. So essentially, and before that, they had been working on it for 2 years. So Diablo 4 has been in development for 4 years. And in my experience, I think when an overlord corporation looks at this and wants to really be butting in and recouping their costs, they would be saying, listen, you have to put something out. And I don't even think that's as unreasonable a thing as you would think. And so at the very least, we would have heard about Diablo 4 this year. And because Activision would have said, I don't care how it looks. I give you another 6 months or another year, and you have to put a big Diablo game, a big Diablo 4 game, not the mobile one, a big Diablo 4 game out, because we need to recoup cost on that development team's costs. And that's not what they're doing. Blizzard is developing tons of things, five dev teams, traditional dev teams we know about, five additional, we're thinking, mobile dev teams. And they're being given time to develop the things and polish the things the way they always have. And I know there's a lot of negativity about Battle for Azeroth. That's not the first bad expansion. People like to think, oh, it's the worst expansion ever. It's so much worse than blah, blah, blah.
The specific criticism of Battle for Azeroth is very important in the Schrodinger's Blizzard setup. Is because when Battle for Azeroth came out, there's a general sense that it had been rushed and that it maybe wasn't finished. That was a sense I felt was maybe a little bit exaggerated, but I understand it. I wouldn't criticize someone for thinking that.
I think there were some bad, not very bad, but some bad decisions made for game design. I don't think it was rushed. It was 2 years.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. But there was a general perception that it was, right, and that it was unfinished. And there was a lot of lamenting, certainly in the WoW community, and which trickled into the Blizzard community in general, of, oh, this isn't the Blizzard we know. The Blizzard we know would have sat on it and gone, okay, look, I know we said we were releasing it now, but we're not going to release it until it's ready, because gameplay overall. So, you know, it's not going to be rushed. We're putting the release date back a couple of months. It's going to come out in this perfect condition, like Blizzard games always do, apparently. this bringing this game out now when it's not finished is not the Blizzard I know. And then a month later, when there was no news on Diablo 4, and then when the Kotaku article came out saying, yeah, this game's been developing for ages, but they're just not ready to show us it yet. It's like, well, how selfish can you be? Come on, Blizzard. This is a disaster. They've had a game in development for 4 years and they're not ready to show us anything at all. That's the Schrodinger's Blizzard part.
Right.
Is that those two criticisms don't match up. And they contradict each other. And having one of those criticisms is makes sense, but having both of them smacks a little bit of being disingenuous to me and wanting to criticize for the sake of it.
Which I think, you know, when you get a bad expansion, which again has happened before, look at Cataclysm. People don't remember it very clearly now because time heals all wounds. And look at Warlords of Draenor. Look at, we're getting very World of Warcraft specific here, but even Mists was very, very, very criticized with the forest of daily quests that were ruining the game. And now Mists is remembered fondly, I think, by everyone. And we were saying at the time, I didn't have a big love for Cataclysm or for Warlords. Mists, at the time, I thought it was being misrepresented. Anyway, it's not the first time there's a bad expansion. And, okay, I'm not going to go into all of it. But the bottom line is, I really think what we're seeing and the rumors and all of this that we're seeing is Blizzard is taking the time, reducing cost because they don't have big games coming out. And I don't count WoW Classic or Warcraft 3 Reforged in that bucket. They don't have big games coming out for the next year or two. They're being given, they are giving themselves a lot more time to develop Diablo 4. That's why they didn't announce it now, because they didn't think it was going to come out this year. So I think they're going to announce it at next BlizzCon, and that gives them another year, because they usually want to announce stuff within a year of at least the beta release. So it's going to give them at least another year. You don't give a company two extra years to develop a game if you're being the evil we need money now overlord. I don't think that's how it works. And they're not getting any games out in the next 12 to 18 months. Or it's not looking like it. So anyway, I think that contradicts the current narrative about Activision Blizzard. I it's pretty obvious to me when you look at all of it. I think a lot of people are looking at parts of it, like you're saying. You only look at the Battle for Azeroth issues and you think, well, Blizzard sucks. And you look at the Diablo 4 not being announced and you think, well, that's not the Blizzard I know. Especially in the light of the Diablo Immortal fiasco announcement.
Well, and there's the optics thing about it as well.
Yes, which is absolutely valid. An issue. Yeah.
Because they're having major issues. I mean, like, you're quite right. Before it's ready, but I think even someone who knows nothing about marketing or communities or anything would know that it wouldn't have been hard just to put a Diablo 4 logo over some fire with a really cool music sting and like a voice going, oh, there are demons here, or something like that. And have that at the end of the Diablo Immortal like announcement, just to kind of take the edge off a little bit and leave everyone happy.
It would have made the community a lot happier, which probably makes it valid. But at the same time, I'm not quite sure I want Blizzard to do what Bethesda has done with Elder Scrolls 6, which is show us a logo that means nothing for a game we know nothing about, and we don't, which will probably not be out for another 3 years. You know, I'm not sure that is, it's the good answer, it's the easy, you were saying it wouldn't have been hard. You're right. It would have been very easy to do it, and it was a short-term good thing. But long-term, the next 3 years, if it's not coming out for 3 years, would have been dominated by that question, where's Diablo 4? I mean, to be fair, it's still
dominated. You're absolutely right, and I think Blizzard clearly agreed with you. I wonder if they would agree with you now.
That's the thing. I think looking at it now, it's like, maybe we should. I think there were other ways to do things differently about Diablo Immortal. I think it was definitely not done right. I am certain that there were voices inside the company saying, don't do it like this, please don't. Ultimately, it was a judgment call, the wrong one, I agree. But again, all of these communications and optics issues don't mean conflating those with the way Blizzard is being run on the game development side, especially in the light of everything we've heard. I mean, go look at the jobs page on Blizzard.com now. There's like 150 job offers, and most of them are for devs. You know, they're... Anyway, okay.
Oh, I totally agree. And, I totally agree. And like, for the sake of argument, someone might say, well, those dev positions, they're probably all for mobile titles. And that's fine too, if it means all the devs working on my favorite titles aren't getting moved to mobile titles because they don't need to, because we're hiring people for mobile. I don't know. And also, I don't know what it's all for, and I don't understand it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, there's a mindset that you kind of choose to take.
I choose to believe that they're developing PC games, and I think there is a lot of reason to believe that they are developing still a lot of PC games. If only the reason that they like money and PC games make a lot of money and there's no reason they can get they can't get money from mobile and PC. So that's a good reason in and of itself. But let's say if we still don't have anything tangible in 2 years, then I might be, even though, you know, I still don't know. Let's say next year they decide, you know what, this game is just, it's not good. We don't want to put this out. And we still don't get Diablo 4. Is it a bad thing? Does it? I mean yes, it's a bad thing because we want Diablo 4. Like,
I would count it as a bad thing overall because obviously I want a game. I'd rather they had made it work and that they had created something beautiful that they did want to release. Obviously, it's bad that they hadn't managed to do that. But to say, oh, Blizzard have changed and that's the Activision like influence. No, surely like working on a game for 4 years and then scrapping it because it wasn't good enough. That's ultimate Blizzard. Isn't that like peak Blizzard right there? That is the Blizzard I know. I don't like it. It annoys me. I'd rather they got it right and hadn't wasted all that money. But that's the anti-Activision part of Blizzard. Surely.
I agree. I mean, let's all hope that we see Diablo 4 next year. This year. Holy crap, it's this year. All right, we'll see. So anyway, that was my take on it. And you can go read the thread if you want. Another little bit of Blizzard news. Soldier 76 is gay. That is crazy. I'm mentioning it because I remember when they revealed that the other gay character in Overwatch, Tracer, was gay. They did it by showing a comic panel where she was kissing her girlfriend. And I remember
In the same comic, Patrick, Torbjorn was revealed to be straight. And that surprised me even more, if I'm honest with you.
That was kind of a shocker, I
admit. That was a massive reveal. And I don't feel like that got the internet attention that it deserved. Because his wife is about... Have you seen that frame?
No, I agree.
His wife is about half his age, has borne him about 1,000 children.
I mean, to be fair...
That was the big reveal for me in that comic strip.
To be fair, I would be surprised if Torbjorn could get a smoking hot male companion as well. So,
I don't know. A man that good with his hands and with turrets, I think.
Well, that might be what makes it work for his wife as well. I remember thinking that they probably wouldn't do that for a male character, revealing it to be gay and kissing another man graphically. They didn't quite do that, but they revealed that Soldier 76, super emblematic character. It's probably the most visible one after Tracer in the game, is gay. And what surprised me was that it really wasn't a huge deal. And what I've seen, maybe it's the circles I hang out in, it's certainly there are some people who were upset about this, and if you go to some places in the internet you'll see negative comments, but overall what I've seen is more of a, oh, I don't care if a character is gay, which I think is the ideal situation we would need to get to at some point in the future. We're not quite there yet, and the reason we're moving toward it, where it doesn't matter, is that developers like Blizzard are pushing this idea of normalizing the fact that, you know, gay people exist. They're everywhere. There's, I don't know how many, what percentage of the population. And so they're probably going to be in games as well. And the reason
I agree with you that we want to reach a point where people care if a character is gay or not. But in the example you just gave there, I'm not sure, like, angrily, grumpily saying that you don't care if a character is gay or not. Like, oh, I don't care if they're gay. I'm not sure that's where we want to be.
No, I agree. And I think
that's what I'm seeing a lot of right now.
But I think it's a step up from, mm-hmm. and again, we're not there yet, but I think it's a step up from what we've seen before, which is, you shouldn't put gay people in my video games. You know, this is like politics. And I think it's still like grumbling, but it's working. We're getting to a place where people actually won't really, like, won't care, but it will be just a natural piece of information, like, oh, they have blonde hair. Okay, cool. And it's funny because there were a couple of commentary from people who were saying, sort of giving more weight to your argument, saying, oh, but you know, if I was gay, I would be, it's a token gesture and I would be offended if I was gay. And I was like, you know what? I think the people who are actually gay do care. And they kind of think it's cool. So anyway, I think it was nice that it was done in a very low-key fashion as well. It was like in a short story that was quite kind of long. And but I think it's a step towards normalizing this, and it's good. And it's because companies like Blizzard are doing these kinds of things. And it's great because unless you dislike gay people active? Anyway, I'm not going to open that whole can of worms.
Look, I'm guilty of being one of those people that when I saw that, I was happy because you know, I knew it'd make a lot of people happy. It made me happy because A, it makes everything much more interesting, and diversity is interesting, and representation of me and my friends is interesting. But if I'm really honest, my glee came by Googling upset reactions to it. And that's where I got my entertainment from that news. Was because, you know, you can, like you say, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean people actually are upset, but you can find someone being upset about anything.
Oh, you can find many
people.
And I
knew that I would particularly enjoy people being upset about this. Mm. So I hunted them down and I found them, and I thoroughly enjoyed how upset they were. And it made me feel really superior and great, and I liked it.
I have to admit that I did feel a little bit of a tingly feeling at the idea that I have been playing a gay character and enjoying it for a long time, but I don't care that much about it, but I think a few people are going to be, oh, what? Soldier, the character I've been playing for a long time is gay? Yeah, and be very
I found
angry.
Lots so of those people, Patrick, and it was immensely satisfying. Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed reading.
I agree. I will still say, however, my reasonable brain, which I try to give center focus all the time, is really we shouldn't be, like, we're engaging in the kind of adversarial online relationship that creates the toxicity we dislike.
Absolutely. So, but I think, you know, that when you're fighting for a cause which is so clearly wrong, kind of the high ground and enjoy that a bit more than you should, and that's exactly what I'm doing. I admit to that, and I'm ashamed of it. I'm ashamed that I hunted those comments down, but I would do it again right now.
But well, at least you're ashamed of it, so that's good. So anyway, hopefully in one day, you know, Gamergate was just 4 years ago, and now Blizzard puts a gay character center stage in their game, and it doesn't really make huge waves. That's
what you say progress. That we've been talking about it for about 4 or 5 minutes now.
Well, so, huge waves for us.
I mean, but surely it will really happen when we don't have these conversations.
Maybe.
And you know, it's not even worth mentioning at all, in the same way that, you know, Torbjorn wasn't worth mentioning, or it's not worth mentioning that Widowmaker had a husband, or Anna had a husband. And, you know, it's not normal for a lot of people. And that's quite clear. And that's a shame. But I think Blizzard are doing a great job of doing their part.
I agree.
Certainly.
All right, a few tidbits of information. PlayStation 4 has sold 91.6 million units, so that's another big chunk in 2018, less than 2017, which was probably peak year, but it's looking like the console is easily going to reach 100 million probably this year, so confirming the huge success. Discord has raised more money, but the more important part is they now have 200 million users, and that is four times what they had a year ago. Like, fourfold increase in user numbers. That is crazy for any service.
Wait, so the Blizzard in-game communities hasn't killed Discord? That blows my mind. I thought that was it for Discord.
Yeah,
I thought they were gone. I thought they were done. Oh, wow. Good on them. Plucky underdogs that they are.
You know, I think it's good to have a basic version of a service everyone is using on your own service. It's like if phones didn't have a calculator, you know? Of course, although maybe those did kill the third party.
I think they probably did, yeah. And maybe watches as well. But I take your point, yeah. And
Blizzard, you're cutting off a bit.
Oh, was I? I'm sorry. Am I back now? I'll be more careful.
Yes.
The Blizzard in-game communities are great. They work really well. And
And no one's using them.
I use them.
Oh, okay. So one person uses them. Are you not too lonely there? Okay.
No, I've got my whole guild. It's lovely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we have secret channels for when we don't want to talk for like, you know,
are those channels on Discord? No.
Yeah, and the healer channel where you bet on who's going to die. It's fantastic. We need all that.
NVIDIA has announced the RTX 2060 graphics card. So if you want to spend less on a ray tracing card, you can. More importantly, they have the RTX 20 series for laptops. And laptops are where the GPU performance takes a hit usually. Hopefully, since the 1080, 1070, 1060 series, that has been compensated. You basically get, let's say, 70 to 80% of the performance of a desktop version. So that's really good. And it's possible for the 20 series now. I would not advise buying a card yet, because new thing is ray tracing, and we're not there yet in terms of ray tracing. It needs to be implemented. Let's wait for the next series, I'd say. HTC has unveiled the Vive Cosmos, which is an interesting VR headset which can work either with your phone or with your PC. And it's a little bit simpler. It has inside-out vision, so you don't need to put the sensor towers in your room. So that's really cool. They don't have a date yet, though, or a price, I believe. So, but VR is still chugging along. Bungie said something really interesting. Not Bungie. Who is it? 343 Industries that does Halo now? I'm going to get my geek card revoked. Yes, 343 Industries. They've said something interesting about Halo, and they said they were going to get early access for the new Halo game, Halo Infinite, at some point, probably this year. No, did they say this year? At some point. But the interesting part is that they're going to start with early access and grow it from here. So there's going to be early access, and then, you know, a small beta, early access, etc., etc. And what usually happens, like, you can't do this for games, well, you could, but usually you do this for games that are game as a service. And of course, the title Halo Infinite suggests that it would be a game as a service, but this kind of gives even more credence to that. So I'm excited to see a Halo game that would be, again, another Destiny-like game. It's funny, you know, we talked about Destiny like, oh, it's just this thing that is kind of faily back when it first released. There are so many Destiny-like games now. They really hit on a formula that really works. Those Bungie dudes, they know what they're doing, even when they stumble a lot, like with
Destiny. I want to see Halo take that even further. I want to start that game by punching down a tree and making a helmet out of it. That's how I want to start that game.
That would be awesome.
And then when I've punched down 1,000 trees, I can make a ship. Be brilliant.
Ooh, now,
that's what I want Halo Infinite to be.
That would be
I want it to be naked people on a beach, like all their Halo gear out, flapping all over the place. I want them to punch down a tree and make a helmet and a gun, and then punch down more trees and make ships, and then form like guilds and go around punching down trees on different planets and making bigger ships and taking over the entire universe. That's what I want Halo Infinite to be.
If you can limit yourself to just one planet, add zombies and do a few other things, you might already have the game you want. But
and it's got roguelike permadeath elements to it, and the game ends when there's literally one person left.
Okay, Microsoft is doing a bunch of things. The more important one is that Celeste is their game of one of the games that is available for free with January's Game with Gold games. So go get it if you haven't already. It is an awesome game, and we've said that way too many times. Katsuhiro Harada is basically in charge of esports at Namco now, Bandai Namco. He's the one behind Tekken 7. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he also took reins on Soul Calibur. There you go. So that's interesting that they're putting him in charge of esports. Street Fighter V might not have a season pass for 2019. Apparently it doesn't. So there might be less characters. So this is the Patrick's Fighting Game corner of the show, which means they might be slowing things down at Street Fighter V, which means we might get Street Fighter VI at some point, and that makes me happy. Star Citizen is targeting 2020 for the single-player game. First time we've gotten a date for anything Star Citizen, so that's interesting as well. Dragon Quest XI is coming to the Switch in 2019, and there's hints that Persona 5, or maybe a new version of Persona 5, is going to be coming to the Switch as well. We'd be excited for that. Dreams, the PlayStation 4 game where you can make games, the creator thing with tons of creation tools, has signups. The beta is come for the beta and is coming. Do I even want to talk about the Madbox? Not really. Slightly Mad is doing a console that is ridiculous. Okay. Anything to add on any of those?
No, I've been watching a lot of Dreams on streams recently.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, it's actually really fun.
So for those who don't know, Dreams is essentially an art/game mechanics building tool that you use on PlayStation 4 with the Move controllers. And it seems like a weird, very powerful tool that like you can literally make games and use it as a game creator or just do art. What's so cool about it?
I think that duality of it being an artistic tool as well as a game making. When you have something like Little Big Planet or Mario Maker or stuff like that, the big question is always, what possibilities do I have for creating games within this tool? And how can I undermine those possibilities and surprise you with those possibilities as well? And that still exists in Dreams. And people are creating some absolutely amazing things, as you'd imagine, already, you know, and the highest rated... Last time I looked in on it, the highest rated sort of little games and things on there have about 30 upvotes and things like that. That's how small scale it all is at the moment. But alongside that, you have people creating their own little museums just of art that they've created using this tool. And it's, you know, they're literally just things on plinths that you walk around and they're really nicely lit. And it's kind of just like almost a social media element to it of just going into someone's little world and having a walk around. And, you know, I don't know how long I'll be interested in it, but or even if I'll take part in it myself, but I just walking around those things and seeing them on stream. And it's been a lovely little diversion on my second screen.
You're making me interested in checking it out. It looks like, at the very least, it looks like something original and something that keeps its promise, because its promise is exactly that. Go ahead. You were going to add something.
I can see a day when, you know, if I get ready, a whole room full of Jaina Proudmoores in various sort of states of relaxation, and like, here is Jaina Proudmoore drinking some tea. Here is Jaina Proudmoore doing her taxes. Here's Jaina Proudmoore cutting down a tree. And just people can walk through that and enjoy all my Jaina Proudmoores, and that will make me immensely proud.
I think that would be very enjoyable. Well, until then, maybe they need to go somewhere else to enjoy Jaina Proudmoore. And I'm not talking about Bellular's
His thumbnails
photos,
in general.
The thumbnails. There you go. I lost the word. Thumbnails. Where could they go if they want Warcraft and analysis and hilarious writing and comedy?
Oh, well, I'll tell you where I would go, Patrick. I'd mosey on down to YouTube, and I would type in Taliesin and Evertel do games, and I would enjoy all of the ridiculousness therein of me and my wife making stupid YouTube videos and bringing everyone up to date with the latest World of Warcraft news just a couple of days or weeks after it's happened, and generally having a gay old time. Be fantastic.
You know, I would really recommend people who have a passing familiarity with WoW, even if it's it has passed, to go and check it out, because I joked about the humor in it, but really that's what keeps me coming back. Because let's be honest, the game itself, I hadn't been playing a huge amount recently, but it's always the intros especially are incredibly well written, which, by the way, I learned is kind of your job to write stuff. So it shows. You're very talented. Thank
well, we did the channel full time now, so the Taliesin and Evertel stuff is literally my job. But
there
you go. Before that, I was a writer in various forms, so yeah.
So go check it out. I will have the link to the Twitter account in the show notes, as I always do, so you can find the channel from there, because your names are impossible to spell correctly if you only hear them, although I guess they are pretty much
spelled. Familiar with Welsh folk hero and
oh really,
mythic tales. Yeah, Taliesin was a famous bard. He was born in a cauldron. It means shiny forehead or something. And he was Wales's great magician. Just after Merlin, he was a big old druid type guy.
Very cool. What about Evertel?
Yeah. It's a made up word, but I think there's a hotel in Dubai that goes by the name of Evertel. We've since discovered.
Well, you know what? Both are equally valuable in my opinion. So there you go.
Thank you. Yeah, she'll thank you for that. Yeah, I think she feels a bit bad about it. That my name has all this meaning and hers doesn't. So,
well, you know what? Your name is an old, reused, rehashed, common thing, and she's creating something new, a new meaning out of hers. So,
absolutely, it's also the name of the Frank Lloyd Wright House Taliesin, the great architect, and he designed his perfect house, and he called it Taliesin. And then one of his servants murdered his entire family. So it was also the site of that. So yeah, I mean, lots of meaning. Take it how you will. Take the name as you will.
All right. So as I said, the link to the Twitter account will be in the show notes. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can find this show at FrenchSpin.com. If you want to leave us a review on iTunes, for example, you could be like Ian from Queens, who said, "If I could rate this anything higher than 5 stars, I would." He says, "Patrick, the host, that's me, is everything you could ever want in a podcaster. Professional, entertaining, and knowledgeable." Oh my God. "Not only is he extremely experienced and well-read, am I? But his taste in guests is also impeccable." I think you would agree, Nick. The way that he discusses industry news and gaming content is so pleasant to listen to, and I have never once finished an episode without wishing that it were longer. Maybe this one will be the exception. Give this guy a listen. Thank you so much, Ian, for this lovely comment. If you want to help us essentially promote the show, you can go to your podcast catalog of choice and leave us a review, or you know, if few stars, or just talk to your friends about the show. Tell them, you know what, you like games, you might like this podcast, so check it out. Or even maybe, you know, take their phone and subscribe them to the show sneakily. Maybe you can do that. Either way, we will be back in about 2 weeks. We were a little bit late for this one, with tons of other news, and I'm hoping I'll be talking about New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe. Probably not Ace Combat 7, though. We'll have to wait for Taliesin to come back for that one. Thanks for listening, and we will be back very soon. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.